一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよう。
It's May 8th and episode 6 of Macross Delta has just finished, which means of course, yes, it's that time of the week. It's time for another episode of the Speaker Podcast, Gur Talk. We're here to Gur Talk the crap out of episode 6 of Delta, spoilers and all. As you may have noticed, it is only the beginning of May. It is not, as I said last podcast, May 24th. We were podcasting from a month in the future, apparently. Thank you to everyone who felt the need to point that out to me. I appreciate the feedback. People who don't give me enough feedback, such as those on my right, our mysterious Venus.
Egan Liu.
And to my left.
Adrian Lozano.
And on the other end of this call.
Renato Rivera. Ruska.
So, hey there, Renato. Without any further ado, there. This was a pretty action-packed episode. Why don't you walk us through it?
All right, why don't I? Well, the episode begins with Messer messing everybody up, because he's telling them right off. He gathers up the Intrepid Three, which is Mirage and Hayate and Chuck, I think.
Chuck is one of the Intrepid Three?
Yeah, he's in there. You think Chuck's going to die? I don't know.
We'll get to that.
Anyway, Messer looks at the three of them and says, "All right, you guys, you've been screwing up. And Mirage, you fly really well, but that's your problem. You're very predictable. And you, Chuck, actually, I don't remember what Chuck's problem was." And then he told them to just go away. And Hayate is like, wait, you called the three of us and you didn't say anything to me? And he's like, yeah, because there's no point in talking to you because you're just an idiot.
Well, I like the fact he said that, I like the fact he said Mirage's problem was that she flew like a textbook and that the minute she encountered anyone who knew what they were doing, they'd be able to shoot her down.
Exactly, right, because her moves become predictable.
Yeah, she doesn't have the genius spirit in a way, you know, like she's not a bad pilot, but she's not a natural, is the vibe I'm getting. And however, he did say that at least Hayate does fly in some unpredictable ways sometimes. So
he
gave him a compliment.
Hayate has got the email man dance, and so Messer is like, yeah, whatever. But I guess that really does show that you are a little bit unpredictable. But that can only take you so far. Both of you are going to end up dead if you keep doing that. And he also told them that you know, they keep aiming at the wings so as not to harm people. And Mirage was like, yeah, but that's because we're fighting against humans, blah, blah, blah. And also, you and the captain also shoot only the wings, and you're doing it okay. And Messer is like, yeah, because we can do it. We have the skills. You don't got no skills. A skill is a thing. No. Anyway.
I think I want Renato to dub Messer in the Delta dub. He's got the snide happening, yeah. All right, continue.
Annika. Is it too late to submit my audition? So then we get a scene of them in that Ragun Yan Yan, and they're like, Freya gets told off by Mukumo.
Well, hang on, can we take a step back? Because before that, we got a bit of talk on the bridge or the war room or something like that.
No, it's Stellar Cartography Room.
Okay, does it actually say that?
No, that's out of Star Trek, but it's basically the same room.
And you get to see what Windermere's been up to. They've got their hands on three planets at this point: Listania, Abel, and Anthem 3, that's apparently. Right. So they're going after planets in this sector, this globular cluster. One after another, bang, bang, bang. So war is already completely underway at this point.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, that there's stuff happening in between these episodes, right? And both the Delta team and the Knights have been going on their own missions in the interim. Mm. So there's a lot of quick development going on behind the scenes.
All the more material for manga.
Oh, yeah, do you think that's going to be...
I think we'll probably get some of it covered in manga, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so they have that meeting. I don't remember what they were talking about, but they said some stuff. But anyway, so then there's a scene where Mikumo is telling Freya... Mikumo is singing the song that the Heinz Prince Hines was singing, and Freya recognizes it, and I think she feels it before she actually hears it, you know, because she says, "Oh, it's that rainbow song," and then she goes upstairs, and Freya is Mikimo is there, and Mikimo tells her, "Yeah, but it's because you can feel something from the heart, right? But it's strange when I hear you sing, I don't feel anything." So then Freya was like, "Whoa!" And then they're both Freya and Hayate are having dinner as usual in Ragunyanyan, and some of the other Delta Team members are there, and the other two Valkyrie girls are there, and both Freya and Hayate are kind of feeling down in the dumps because at the same time they both respect their respective senpai, right? In Hayate's case, it's Messer, right? Because Messer flies so beautifully, and of course Mikumo sings so beautifully. But at the same time, they're both so pissed off that they can't meet the stellar demands that they're imposing upon them. I don't know.
Important thing about
what's
that
the girl? The girl with the breasts. I can't remember her name.
We're sorry,
Makina.
Oh yeah, because it's not a name. Yeah, there you go. So Makina says something. I don't remember what it was.
Well, the thing is, Makina and Ray Ray, then we move on.
Next scene.
No, this is important because Makina and Ray Ray are in this hammock and they're talking and they're explaining the difference.
You mean they're in bed together?
Well, we have to make it at least somewhat subtle.
You have to make it somewhat subtle. She pokes her breasts.
That's subtle. She wasn't groping. She was poking. Now,
is that the excuse you use on the train? Come on, man.
Wow. Someone wants this podcast over soon.
You told me to take the reins, man.
So they use this to explain the difference between flying styles, right? They're like, look, when you bring back a Valkyrie, it's a mess. It's like a girl with her makeup all messed up. She's got panda eyes. It's all over the place. When Messer brings his Valkyrie back, it's still smooth as a baby's skin. And that's because Hayate dances, so he's got a lot of extra movements, whereas Messer is very to the point. He is, you know, the god of death. He flies straight to his target, does what needs to be done.
It's so weird that they're using that metaphor to describe the situation to Hayate instead of Alto Sao Tome, right?
But they
said that to Alto, and he would be like, "Oh, I know exactly what you mean." But now, Hayate, I'd be like, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Now your Valkyrie, too, can be as smooth as a baby's bottom, Renato. So, moving on.
Yes.
After this, where do we go to?
Commercial break. And then after the break, which was awesome, by the way, because it had Roy Fokker in it. Akira...
Kamiya.
Yeah, Akira Kamiya was narrating the Muscle Man.
Oh.
Kimikuman mobile phone game.
Okay.
So there's lots of old school Macross in the interim. Like, we got Sho Hayami narrating the High Metal R toys.
Well, you find out that Messer does have some sort of health condition.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. So when they were walking back down the corridor, the Captain Arad, says to Messer, "By the way, how's your..." Well, he says, "How's your body?" which sounds really racy in English. But he says, "So how are you feeling? How are you doing?"
Right.
And he was like, "Yeah, it's okay." So we understand that he's got some kind of condition, which also reminds me that at the same time, over on the planet of Windermere, Hines is also weakening, apparently, the prince,
right,
the singer. So he can't sing as well as he used to, which is a bit strange. We don't know why yet, I think. And then the blonde guy from Aquarion and Escaflowne, what was his name?
Keith?
Yes, there you go. Yes, he takes him to some spot that says this is the scar of the earth that those people made. And we don't actually see what he's talking about until later at the end of the episode, so we'll come back to that, of course. But they introduce it here.
Also, at the same time, Mirage is dealing with all the pressures of being a genus and not living up to the name.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, she's going as far as putting in extra simulation time and getting shot down in the simulator.
Yes, instead of going to Ragunyanyan. And she's hearing all these voices in her head. I don't know who they're supposed to be, but probably people from her past that they're saying, oh, this is the grandchild of the genius couple and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and those voices, so when you hear those voices, they seem to have a little bit of the Zentradi reverb on it.
I thought it was just because it was her thought bubble.
It could be, but just seemed like it had more of that little
It reminded me of that Mui Mui performance.
That's exactly where he was getting it from. I guarantee he got that from Mui Mui.
Alright, nobody knows what we're talking about now. Moving on. Commercial break. And then after that, we get the battle.
No, we don't. Wait.
What do you mean?
Well,
we get
as Adrian was saying, they showed this these ruins on the planet Abel, and this was tying with what you were saying about Heinz's song, Renato. But what I thought was interesting was the visual style of, like, it didn't seem as much of a man-made structure as other ruins we've seen in this thing. It looked like something that was a cross between a Macross Zero, like, ruin or relic and a Macross 31, how it had all those glowing lines and stuff in it. It was really
odd. I actually
don't
remember what you're talking about.
Well, it's...
But I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, because it seems like it's a receptor built into the planet.
Something like that.
And that's how they're able to take over the planet, kind of without attacking it.
Getting any resistance.
Yeah, so I think they're the relics on the neighboring planets are all communicating. So
that could be it. Anyways,
we have yet to find out the one that's on Ragna. We have yet to see if there is one on Ragna.
That's a good point. So, anyways, Renato, tell us about this battle.
So, before the battle, you see all the because this is going to be the first space battle, right? So, you see all the VF-31s getting equipped with some of their new fast packs. They call it Protector Pack, I think. What?
They're technically, first of all right, let's get into this. So the VF-31s, first they have a projection unit, which looks almost like something out of the VF-1 SOL from the Super Famicom game.
Thinking of the sound booster packs from Macross 7, yeah.
So it's actually a projection unit, and what they call an MMP booster pack, and not really sure what the MMP stands for at this point. But... yeah, that stuff just came out, and it's like, wow, they're putting all this on it already? It's like, they're just throwing everything out there so quickly.
Yeah, and I like that they don't even explain it. Because if you've been following Macross, then you know what that is. Mm-hmm. It's a sound booster, right? This is basically straight-up sound boosters, and you don't even need to question it. So, like, even Frontier didn't really have these, because they used Fold Quartz. Like in the what's that one? The YF-29.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is straight up, like Egan said, Gwyn, you said it was the VF-1 SOL.
Yep.
Which is an unfortunate anagram.
Well, we've never seen it again, so it's an accurate name, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly accurate when I play the game. But yeah, so that was the first instance of what would become the sound boosters, as Egan pointed out, and this is just that for the new millennium, I think. Right. So
and
it's pretty cool to see it.
You and say what it actually does, because you go for it. Go.
Well, it looks like they project images of the singers onto asteroids.
So it they
and I assume it also projects the sound. Or the song energy.
Right. They fired all these little things at the beginning, which didn't seem like drones, but I can only presume they're like hologram projector
speaker
spikes.
Pods.
Yeah, well, speaker pod hologram cast. Speaker pods into the asteroids, and then these packs allowed them to keep the transmission going around where they were flying. So it probably gave them an area of effect around their Valkyries.
Yeah, so what would they have done if they weren't in an asteroid field?
They would probably have had a singer in each Valk, I guess. Which is why you can change all the 31s to two-seaters.
Interesting. They didn't actually say it was an asteroid belt. They called it the satellite orbit above that planet. Because one of the things from the first Macross, they were making a point. When you see all those kind of rocks flying around, like in Star Wars and other sci-fi films, that's not shouldn't be in real life what an asteroid belt. Because if something like that in real life, then it would have been pulverized to dust already. So it might have been, like, yeah. in the first Macross series, someone had blown out a planetoid or a small asteroid, creating that debris.
Perfect. Good point.
For creating a projection field.
So yeah, when they start this battle, it's mentioned that over 70% of the nuns' forces are already under mind control when they begin.
Yeah.
So apart from the Aeral Knights that do appear, you've also got 70% of their own allied forces are against them. And one really tiny thing I thought was interesting and became more clear after the episode when I thought about it was that you got to see the 31s popping their arms out while still in fighter mode and yes. firing those gun tonfas, right? And at first I thought, wow, this is just taking the way gun tonfas are really handy in Gerwalk mode, and now you can use them in fighter mode, so they're even extra handy. This is great. But then I thought about it, and it's like, wait a minute. The equipment pack is now this projection unit. They don't have gun pods.
Oh,
yeah, we don't need them.
Well, if they wanted to fire anything long distance, but basically they've got, missiles and these short-range gun tonfa. And I guess if they want to shoot someone with a gun and not a missile while in fighter mode, while this projector unit is equipped, that's their only option. It was kind of interesting.
Hmm.
But Chuck seems to love it, using it all the time.
I only noticed Chuck using it.
What are the idols doing during all this, Renato?
Singing.
What are they singing?
Oh, they're singing a brand new song. I don't know what it's called. Isn't it new? I've never heard it before.
According to the ending credits, it's Valkyrie Attack. In English, no less. Rather support, huh?
They just phoned that one right in.
What do we call it?
Oh, it's just the whole setup to that battle when it came from after the commercial break. It was like the whole Hulk to Null overflow from the movie.
Exactly.
Had the same kind of setup where they're, they're...
The dome?
Yeah, the dome comes up. The barrier dome with everyone in it singing. And they're doing all like the wing checks and the booster checks and moving all the thrusters around.
Right.
And then they all fly off. And what's cool about the... Aethers that multiple fighters can fly off of it at one time because of the way the deck's set up.
Because the decks are angled.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of technical minutiae that's really well thought out. At first, it just looks like they're trying to be flashy, but the further we get into it, it seems to be really well thought out. Yeah. And, I agree with you completely. As soon as I saw that dome come out, I was waiting for Ranka to start singing.
Is that the one that you hate, Adrian?
No, that's the one...
Which is the jump song?
Which is the jump song?
No, the song Adrian hates is Gira Gira Summer.
Yeah, I don't like Gira Gira Summer at all.
No, but you said there was some song that sounds like an opening from Bleach or something.
Oh, that's Wings of Farewell.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Just an opening guitar riff kind of thing.
But, it was funny, Renato, because in Wings of Farewell, when that happened, I had a friend ask me, why are they bringing the girls out onto the deck? Why can't they do this from inside? And there's really no good way to answer it. And there's still no good way to answer it. Because I'm looking at these girls, and it's like, look, they're projecting these images of them, right? But only two episodes ago, we had this conversation where they're like, well, you can't really record our voices. They have to be live. It's like, I get that, but if you're projecting them through these pods anyway, why aren't you seeing from within the ship?
That's because the bridge on the quarter is too small to have her singing below the bridge bunnies, like in the TV show.
Okay.
Because when Cheryl was singing aboard the Frontier, she was singing inside, because you see her drop from her dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
So she's actually in the ship in episode 24.
But how about tonight in Delta then?
Well, because it's a smaller... Well...
I don't think it's a small... Well, yeah, it is a small ship, but still, I was just thinking, why are they out on deck? But they are using pink light barriers.
They need to be on the stage for some reason. I don't know. But
we're going to have...
But if they were on a stage... Here's the worst thing about this episode. No animated dance choreography scenes. Huh. I mean, no non-robot ones, at least.
Interesting. No Eternal Circus-y looking missiles as well. Most of the missiles we see fire straight, and then we go straight to a Do You Remember Love kind of homage of seeing them on the street. That's the one, yeah. So in the middle of all this, we've got a bunch of great action, and I stand by what I was saying before. The choreography in this is a step up above anything we've seen in Macross TV to date, I would say. Would anyone argue with that?
No.
Make a distinction.
Well, yes, many Macross people would.
The video series, right? Like,
yeah, just yeah, the TV, TV for TV, yeah.
Many people would argue, but not on this podcast, I hope.
Just go. I would.
You would? Yeah. You think what, the original is better?
No, I like Frontier's mecha battle, space choreography better.
Okay.
I mean, I liked it. It was slower than Frontier's.
It was slower than Frontier's?
I felt it was, especially the transformations. You know. Not that much slower, but you can just see that there's a little bit of a difference.
Hmm.
I haven't... Okay. I haven't seen anything but the movies in recent memory, so I can't really argue with you there. No. So let me get the next plot point, if we dare to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Hayate is having a bit of trouble, so is Mirage. And there, at one point, the dome, as you described, it's not really a dome; it's more like a pyramid that goes over the top of the stage that the girls are performing on. It's apparently protected by some sort of barrier, and one of the Venga boys starts shooting at the dome.
Right.
And apparently, with all of these barriers, because this being Macross, if you keep shooting it, eventually it will explode. So the dome starts getting some cracks in it, and
energy cracks.
Yeah, energy cracks. Just like every other Frontier did this as well many times, and the guy that was piloting, I don't know, it was one of the twins, I think. He calls out to Freya and says, "You traitor." Blah, and apparently tries to reach her, but I keep forgetting people's names. Hayate gets in there and takes him out for a little bit.
But before that, Mikomo jumps in front of her and shields her, and I was curious as to whether Mikomo was physically trying to cover Freya, in which case you've got to ask...
Yeah, in space.
Yeah, why does Mikomo think she can do that? And... the other thing is, was it that, or was she kind of covering for her in the other sense of the word, because Freya's fold receptor wasn't really happening? Because she looked kind of annoyed when she covered Freya.
Well, one, it wasn't one of the twins. It was the one...
Bo? No.
Yeah, Bo.
The redhead?
Yeah, because he...
Oh, it was Bo, yeah.
He was the one that told the twins to join him on the attack. So, that's right. And then he came in, and Hayate... got in the way or save Freya, but in that scene, as it's going on, Freya starts doing the noon noon noon, like when she got excited in the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and then basically either she was distracted from that, or that's where I saw it was Mikimo was basically didn't want to feel. She started feeling upstage and just stood in front of her.
Hmm.
Either because she was lacking in her performance or. She could tell she was going to raise up above her.
Interesting. I got the feeling, well, in my opinion, it seemed like it, because she was being accused of, you know, being a traitor, and her rune starts to drop. So I thought, you know, fold output's not what it needs to be, and Mikum was like, she's not again. You know, because she accuses Freya after all this, of course, you know, of being dragging the team down. But before that happens, Hayate sees a bit of action, as you were... beginning to explain, Renato.
Yeah, so I think I don't remember very well, but I think Hayate is dealing with Bogue, and while he's doing that, Mirage is having a spot of trouble with, I don't know, one of the twins, or maybe some Master. Kid.
A spot of trouble? Mirage's having a spot of trouble?
Yeah, and she almost ended up in the wreckage. Anyway.
She was basically having to deal with, what's his name, Master Hellman? And
it was
him,
the boy.
Hellman, and a new kind of
a red shirt.
Oh, really? Knight. He doesn't have a name?
No.
He's not one of the Venga boys.
He's not one of the main guys, no. He was just basically a red shirt. Because on the Delta side, they brought out their own red shirts, which got destroyed as well.
Really?
We didn't see the pilots, but they
we have 31s.
Yeah,
the Alpha and Beta.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we saw the 31.
They have other they have other members of Valkyria that got show up as well.
Doing they were covering
some of the old school fans.
Well, they had these 31As in the gray
first
that we
time
saw.
We see them in combat, right?
Yeah, we saw them from episode 2 very briefly, and I wanted to see more of them. Damn it!
Anyway, so Red Shirt Boy. He starts shooting up Mirage, and the same thing is going on with her. You know, she's got her pinpoint barrier shield up, but they're starting to crack and they're starting to give way. And Hayate sees this, and he tries to get over as close as he can, and he attacks the Red Shirt Boy. And Red Shirt Boy, here's something that I didn't really get. Like, it seems like a helmet materializes over his face.
Over whose face?
The Red Shirt guy.
Well, all the helmets...
Or does it actually come down from the back like it does in the VF-31? I thought it...
If we go by the opening, then the helmets are all there to begin with. They just don't show them.
I think it's because they're...
Is it kind of like Brera?
Yes.
Yeah, so they're in there, and then he ejected, and since he's coming out of the cockpit, basically that virtual realm, or the virtual space, is basically broken.
Yeah, that's what I got as well. But, yeah, Hayate shot he turned him into Swiss cheese. He just completely grilled him and...
Shot him, but he was okay. And then he ejected, and then he got caught up in the explosion because every time you shoot something, it explodes in any anime or any movie ever.
So the question is, did he actually
Except
die?
Last Action Hero. When they go to the real world.
Did he actually die? I'm not sure.
We don't know, but I remember reading on the internet a long time ago a review of Macross Plus Movie Edition where they think Gold might still be alive.
Well, it worked for Alto at the end of Wings of Farewell, you know.
Because he's the main character.
This kid ejects, he possibly gets killed. Everyone ends up back at base because the aeronauts pull out.
I like how you've taken over the whole damn summary.
Well, you know, keep going. It's
all right, go ahead.
We go back to base.
This is the epilogue now.
Well, we get, you know, Hayate's up on deck feeling down, and Freya is similarly kind of down, and Mikimo tells her she needs to, you know, pull her weight, and she should also go and talk to Hayate because, you know, he saved her butt while she was on stage. Meanwhile, she kind of overhears Hayate getting a prep talk from Mirage, who's talking about the first time she shot someone down during her first year in the service, and how everyone else in the team has shot people down before and how they deal with it. But after all this, you know, Hayate comes out of it fairly well. I was actually half expecting him to do the, oh, well, I quit, or I'm going to be down and depressed for a while. But no, he rebounded pretty well.
Yeah, he's not Amuro Ray, he's not Shinji Ikari, and he's not the guy from, what's his name? Dagrum. He's not AG from Leisner. He's not any of these people that we've seen this in robot anime a billion trillion times. As soon as the main character shoots someone, he starts brooding around for about 10 or 15 episodes. But he doesn't do any of that. So, there you go. I think that Mirage said something interesting, which was that, obviously you never forget your first kill. It's very shocking. And you probably never get over it, but you do learn to hide those emotions. And so if that's the price that you pay, that kind of pressure that you have to constantly feel, that responsibility that you're always feeling, that you have to take someone's life, that guilt, if hiding that guilt and the pressure of hiding that guilt is the price for keeping other people happy and maintaining peace, then she says it's worthwhile, and that's what she's learned to do, and that's what made Hayate feel better. So immediately after that, he stood up and said, "Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
what the hell did I have a problem with?"
Really minor point. When you got to see the Valkyrie team. Just before this happened, they were all wearing different civilian outfits. Were they? They weren't the outfits they performed in, because they performed in their regular attire. But these civilian clothes they were wearing after the mission, Finally, we're getting to see the clothes they were revealed in on the front packet of the Baby Star Ramen, which comes out tomorrow. Funny timing, that. This snack food with them on the front in this costume. And these costumes were revealed tonight. I just thought it was really amazingly timed marketing.
And I feel like I have to get some Baby Star Ramen right now, then.
Well, there's 18 types of stickers, according to Minori Suzuki, so you've got to get them all,
really?
Renato. Yeah.
And it just turned midnight, so you could probably go to a store and get them right now.
Wait, there were like a couple of hundred people at that event a couple of weeks ago where they gave us out some of those
samples,
packs,
right? And I got two
and
Freyas.
I only saw Freya and Mikumo.
Yeah,
I got a Freya, you got a Freya, Egan got a Mikumo.
I can only think that possibly there were sample packs and they didn't put all the stickers in yet. Maybe.
Either that or Freya and Mikumo are extremely rare right now.
I think Freya's going to be extremely common. But Minori Suzuki already has a full set from eating so many of these things, according to the Gori Gori radio program on every Sunday morning. But anyways, after this, we get this scene back on what planet?
It's planet Windermere, but it's Scarfell. It's a town called Scarfell.
Oh, no, the region of Scarfell?
But it used to be called Carlisle.
Oh, city, yeah.
Okay. And
so, you know, it gives you a hint of, you know, there was a city here, it must have been destroyed, something must have happened. We don't know.
Very British, UK kind of sounding name for that city, no? Carlisle?
Well, they have knights there in the UK.
There you go. So you're one of the...
No.
The Aerial Knights, Renato. Your accent's giving you away here.
Okay.
Anyway.
Are you one of the aerial prisoners then?
So what's the thing about this city?
Oh, history, no.
What's the big reveal?
The big reveal is that there are electric bolts coming down from the sky into the ground, and really we don't know much else about it.
Macross 2.
Why is that not from Macross 2?
Because the lightning discharges from Macross.
Oh, yeah.
You need to rewatch Macross 2, Renato.
Again this week. Yes.
Well.
And so what, there's this like crater in the ground, which doesn't seem like that much of a big deal.
I don't know, man. If Tokyo was wiped out by a crater in the ground and we suddenly got the dystopian future that was Akira, I would be saying it's a big deal.
I'd be trying to get one of those sweet battery-powered lasers. But, I mean, it looks like, you know, if I go by Halo terminology, it looks like one or two laser shots trying to glass the planet unsuccessfully, and they just glassed a town or the backyard of a town. It wasn't a town-sized crater.
Mm.
But
Oh, well, I don't know.
Do we actually get a sense of scale other than...
No, we don't.
It's formally...
Oh, we do. I'm actually replaying the scene right now. There seems to be, like, small, tiny trees around it, so it looks pretty big, I think.
Hmm. So when they say formerly city, the entire city's probably gone.
Yeah. Hmm.
Interesting. Okay. And so,
I mean, it looks small because it's at a distance from where they're standing.
And this is supposed to be, you know, the proof of whatever treachery that the Windermerians are accusing UN Spacey of.
Yeah.
And
so he calls that the scar of the Earth that the UN Spacey left.
Right. So.
So we don't know who that is.
Then we cut to what, end credits, and after which we had a kind of Marvel Universe moment.
Oh, whoa! Marvel Universe moment.
Yeah, because there was a scene after the credits talking about what was going to happen next.
Okay.
So it was like a small preview saying then their mission was going to be. To sneak into the planet Voldor, was it? And as the first step of getting towards Windermere, as a... what's the word I'm looking for?
Infiltrate,
that's the one. Infiltration mission. Did I miss something, Renato? What was that?
I don't remember. Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay.
Which leads into what they call the next episode... Send you enemy lines, or infiltrating enemy lines.
Yes, where infiltrating enemy lines apparently means that Mirage has to wear weird, fluffy, furry ears. Did you not see that?
I'm so looking forward to the cosplay.
That's right, because we haven't seen what the citizens of Voldor look like.
Yeah, we only saw the
Well, apparently the they look like Pikachu.
Yeah, we only saw the Valks from behind in that one screenshot. So, yeah, we had fish people on one planet, and now we're going to have the furries on another planet.
Ah, there.
Variety. This show is all about variety. But look, thanks for that, Renato. Look, yeah, I want to ask everyone's opinions just to wrap this up, wrap up this part of the cast. I'm feeling that, how do I put it, this was a really action-packed episode. It was throwing yet more new stuff out there in the form of these projection units and these new type of fast packs. I will say that it seems to have found its rhythm well. But I'm just wondering, all right, where does it go from here? Because this was a well-paced episode. It had good action loaded in the second half, but it didn't have the same kind of real cliffhanger or wanting to know what's really going to happen next that some of the earlier episodes had. So I'm wondering, is it settling more into a pattern? Has it found its niche and now it's going to cruise along? I'm not sure.
One of the worries I had that I was worried that it might be getting predictable, you notice at the end of the battles, towards the end of the episode, is when you get the enemy commander coming onto the comm saying, okay, everyone return. Well, this battle, the previous battle, the battle ends just because the aerial knights are told to pull back, return to base. And I'm worried that's going to become a pattern.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. In that way, it's very similar to Macro 7.
Right.
That's how it used to work. The first half, you'd have a lot of talking going on, moving the plot forward. The second half would be a space battle, and it would always end with, Gigil, retreat! And he's like, Narr! In this case, it's long-haired...
Keith is doing the exact same thing, or it's like, yeah, Keith, I don't want to return, I just want to take out the enemy, wipe them out. But
Exactly. So it's the same thing. And everyone loved that show, right?
Yes. I really like the launch scene from the Aether, which we're just rewatching at the moment, and because they didn't, it was almost kind of video gamey in the camera tracking on the shot, but they showed the planes on deck, and similar to the final launch sequence of the 29 in Wings of Farewell, you saw the thrusters move, you saw the armament packs pop up, as they turn out to be, projection packs. They flip up, they flip down. But then, because, as Adrian said, the angle of the deck, you can have multiple planes, Valkyries launching at once. The camera just pans over. Not unlike in episode 1, really, of Macross Frontier. But it was just a really well-done scene. I thought it was really pretty, and I was just thinking, this needs to be a video game.
I'm sure they'll make one.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Any other thoughts there?
It'll be a dance rhythm game, then.
Another thing I liked for the course of the series, in previous Macross projects and other science fiction films, we know you have the two bickering people who might end up together, being, in this case, Mirage and Hayate. They might have the bickering going on where they'll be at odds. By this episode, they've become a good working team. Basically Max and Miria. They're tag-teaming each other, they're backing each other up, and it's not always him trying, feeling he's under the hoof of his instructor. He's actually listening to the instructor. He knows her value, she knows his value. So that can, of course, they're both getting pushed on by Messer to be better, but then them working together as a team, I like.
Well, he's also working together with Freya fairly well, because you saw them supporting each other in the Ragunanyan.
And even the other people, characters are noticing they're doing things in sync with each other.
So he's building up these two relationships concurrently really well, but I'm not sure that either one seems like a romantic relationship at this point.
No, that's the one thing I've noticed. They haven't really made it a point to really say anyone's in a triangle right now.
Right.
Everyone's chasing their own kind of dream or trying to live up to their life, their experience. Their heritage.
Right.
They're not really interested in the other person. And as you're saying, they're flying together like Max and Miria, but they are the worst ones on the team.
Right.
So they're basically just supporting themselves to, stay in the game.
That's a good point. Speaking of staying in the game or not, there just seems to be an awful lot of characters that could be potentially earmarked for death. Messer's health, as I mentioned, was brought up. On the Errol Knight side, of course, Hines is in ill health. The way Micklemore seems to just suddenly cover for Freya, which could even have turned out to be physically, just you get the feeling she might make a somewhat noble sacrifice at some point. It's hard to tell who's going to make it through the series.
As I remember, the last episode we were told the ages of some of the other Aerial Knights, and one of them is over the age limit, the average age range, and right. One is just about hitting it. So,
a lot of... It could be a significantly narrowed down cast by the end of the broadcast, I guess.
But so it won't be a very broad cast then?
Very... wait. Slow clap, everyone. Slow clap.
Thank you.
Final comments?
I'm not here all night.
By Renato, any final comments from you?
Yeah, I thought it was great, as usual. So far, I haven't had any complaints with the series, really.
Mm-hmm.
This was very, 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 very similar to... Well, I've already talked about this. Very, very similar to a pacing in a regular Macross 7 episode. So if you don't like that show, then you won't like this show. So stop watching.
Oh, that's harsh. Speaking of things that are a little less harsh, if you can bear with us on the line for a short while more, Renato, we've got a question and a little bit of feedback. So been contacted by a few people who I want to thank. They've expressed their appreciation for the cast, which has been great. I can't pronounce half of these names. Guy XXED or Guygzed said thanks for all the effort and the context we're providing. Arbit said he's not listening, and Arbit's been on the cast before, so he needs to hurry up and start listening. But look, in particular, I got a question from...
He went out of his way to tell us he's not listening?
Yes. Even though he's been on the cast. Thanks, Arbit.
What was the point of thinking if he's not listening? I mean, I thank you for giving us the feedback, but if I thank you, you won't listen to my thanks. So listen to my thanks!
So someone, a listener going by the name of Mazinga, had a question I want to run by everyone. And he was asking, how are we seeing Delta received so far in Japan? Because, of course, people see online what the Western fandom is talking about. But, you know, he's asking how would we say it's being received compared to other currently airing series such as Carbonari or Gundam Unicorn, whether we're getting a sense of whether it's a hit or a miss at this early stage of the broadcast. I would say it's too early to tell, by far, even guess. And for one, I know Adrian and I are not the best people to ask because we hang around a lot of very hardcore Macross fans. And of course, it was a hit with all of them before it started. You know, they're the invested, they're the hardcore, they're going to love pretty much whatever comes out. I will say that I've been approached by, you know, people at work and female friends who I know watch anime but aren't Macross fans per se, and they've asked me about it and or said they've been watching it, which I thought was interesting. A lot of the, you know, music hasn't come out except for the two songs on iTunes. You know, the first single drops later this week with the first album next month. After that, I'm thinking we might see more play of the songs in Akihabara and whatnot. But I don't see too much about Delta among, you know, just my general everyday life at the moment. I mean, have you heard much, Renato?
The question is in comparison to other anime, right?
Right.
And unless you're talking about Sazae-san Don and Detective Conan, I don't know anyone who watches anime, really. Other than the people who are in the industry. And so in the industry, of course, people are watching it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, most of those people are working on it. So, again, I'm in kind of the same boat. I can't really... Anime is not mainstream anymore. And it hasn't been for a long time now, for over a decade. Evangelion was probably the last huge, great hit that... that was on TV, and as soon as you had the late night time slots, it stopped being something that anyone can just watch. Like it's something that you get information about and you decide to watch because you've got the internet and that will help you locate what time it's on, what channel it's on. it's you're not going to be flicking through the channels at 3 a.m. and, you know, coming across these shows.
Well, having said that, at least Delta's on at 10:30 as opposed to, you know, the airing time for Frontier.
Well, in Tokyo.
Oh, in Tokyo, yeah. But nowhere else matters. Sorry, Howard.
I was thinking that, you know, about the, we're now about week six in the spring season, right?
Mm-hmm.
And about the same time last year, there were a breakout, what we can see would later on become breakout hits. Shirobako, the anime about making anime, or Mr. Otomatsu, the anime that became the Fujoshi hit that's creating crowds and selling out magazines.
Mm.
But this season, I haven't seen anything like breakout yet so far, week six so far in the season.
I still think it's too early.
I'm about the closest I can think of, there's buzz about having heard I'm Sakamoto. That one, among diehard anime fans, because of the manga and the comedy in it. But other than that, nothing's really broken out this spring season.
Mm. Kaminari,
even that one, because it's late the night, past midnight, and it's on streaming only on Amazon Prime, so it's limiting itself.
Having said that, Carbonari's already had a couple of exhibits to its artwork because of all the Mikimoto designs, and we haven't gotten anything like that for Delta yet.
Wait.
I don't know. That's just hero worship to me. It's as much as I love Mikimoto. I mean, Carbonari is getting less traction than Delta, regardless of the amount of exhibits, because we're talking about an exhibit on some floor in Shibuya, where anime fans don't really go anymore in the last 15 years, and it's inside of Tower Records.
Well, not only that, I mean, the first exhibit that they had was in Odaiba, right?
Yeah, the other one is in Odaiba, in the main entrance of the Toho Cinemas.
We didn't know about it.
We didn't even know about it. We went to see Batman v Superman,
it was
already closed by 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And that was during the same weekend as Anime Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing saying, go over there, there's something going on.
Or is Anime Japan a good indicator, given how huge the booth
was? The previous year, when I was at Anime Japan, Egan's boss asked me to go to the exact same spot because there was a Saint Seiya exhibit, and I went there, and it was packed as hell.
Yeah, so, Gwyn, I think you're confusing two things. Mm-hmm. You're confusing popularity with how much it's being pushed through the PR machine. The question is whether those kind of PR shots are hitting or missing their target. And I think it's a bit too early to tell. You guys have got a better tool to gauge that than I have in Twitter. You find out how many people are tweeting about Kaminari, how many people are tweeting about Delta and all these shows. And I think you might have your answer there. That's the best gauge I think we have at the moment. With regards to Osomatsu-san and stuff like that, Osomatsu-san was a surprise hit. I'm not sure about week six. It was about halfway through, I think, when people started realizing that it was becoming a huge hit. And that was with the female audience that it wasn't originally targeting. What was the other hit that you talked about? Shirobako, right? Yeah. So Shirobako was a hit with regular people, as well as anime fans, and it was a surprise hit for Warner Brothers, because Warner Brothers are the ones that were distributing the Blu-rays. So Shirobako sold more Blu-rays than hardly had any other real goods and items. The only Shirobako-related event that I remember during the time it was actually on was, apart from the Comiket one, was one of my my local donut shops had a Shirobako tie-up.
Hmm.
And when I say local, it was because it's in Musashi Sakai, which is where Shirobako actually takes place.
Right, yeah.
So they did a lot of regional things there, probably to get people to come over to the local area.
Right.
much like many anime do these days. But again, I think that was it smells of an afterthought to me.
Fair enough. Well,
you can't really tell at this stage. We might be able to tell within a couple of months.
Right. I think you're completely dead on there. And yeah, with regards to exhibits and whatnot, you know, it depends where the marketing dollars are spent. However, you know, as far as the general public, like, I'm seeing more Delta promotions and marketing that hit me, but I'm part of their target market.
Whereas, yeah, you're following people on Twitter that are doing all the fan art and cosplay, right. Whereas not much of the other ones, right?
Right, whereas, you know, Carbonelli, you know, I mean, yes, that's just a marketing piece. It has Mickey Model's name behind it to drive, you know, an art exhibit at this early stage. But the fact of the matter is that thing was there, and there were posters out the front of Tower Records in Shibuya, which, for better or worse, normal people will see. Now, whether they go up and see the exhibit is not the, you know, is a whole different issue. But
yeah.
My point is, I don't see posters for Delta in Shibuya yet.
To be fair, in Shibuya, they also did that karaoke thing right in front of Parco, which is about as mainstream as it gets, as well as
in Shinjuku. That's true. That's a good point.
They showed that on Alpha totally Vision forgot, right? That entire 0.89 episode.
That's but a good point.
At the same time, when we both went to both of those events, did you see much interest from the mainstream crowd walking past?
No, they looked at it and laughed in both instances. The Studio Alta screen was playing the entire first episode, and most regular people were just walking past, looking at us, looking at the screen, looking at us again, and laughing and walking off. So, not a great indicator there.
They didn't remember love, Renato. That's all. Love. But all right, so...
Oh, I would just say, in the last year and a half, I've kind of veered away from mecha anime and have started watching other shows, and I've chimed in before. So, and I've was introduced to those shows by somebody else that is really into a lot of anime. And that person watched Frontier. She sings Frontier songs. She knows more than just Frontier. She knows about Gundam. She knows about, you know, pretty much every show out there. And so with Twitter, like you're saying, I'm following the same people as Gwen, but I'm also following a bunch of other people that aren't mecha related or stuff.
He's trying to say he has more of a life than I do, and he'd be right.
But
more of an anime life, I don't know if it counts.
Yeah, it's kind of more broader anime life. And but then you were mentioning, like, we have these industry friends, and we have them all on Facebook, and that's the same with my Facebook. My Facebook feed is all these Macross Facebook groups that I follow, so I get all these, the same, you know, Akibo Showroom posts from the same different groups, but same pictures, whatever. But then, the people we know in the industry that actually go out and go to events in their own personal time, it's basically, was that Onomatsu? How do you say that show?
Mr. Osomatsu-san.
Yeah.
Osomatsu.
They're going to those events and posting up pictures and showing little crepes or food made, or they bought this, or I bought all these things, and they're really into it. None of the people we know in the industry are talking about Delta. Like,
yeah.
They may be talking to, if we talk to them, have you watched Delta? Oh, yeah. But they're not putting it up on Facebook, other shows.
The few people I've had that discussion with who I know and aren't hardcore mecha fans or Macross fans, they're more like, oh yeah, I watched a couple episodes of Delta. Oh yeah, the music ain't bad. Idols, huh? Yep. Cool. Good for you. Enjoy. That's about it.
Where, if you go back to Frontier, it was pretty much overnight from the preview episode, especially in Akibo. I've said that before. And then even at work, when I worked at the animation school, and when I first got there, I was like, I'm a big Macross fan. Oh, that's old. I'm like, well, there was 7, there was 0, like, 4 years ago, never heard of it. And then I told all these people who are teaching in the industry that know about animators, know about animation, and then Frontier aired, and half those same people came to me and said, oh, you should watch Frontier.
Should I have? Thanks.
That's not actually happening. Well, I mean, I'm not there anymore, but there's definitely a night and day difference between the popularity of Frontier's instant popularity, and I think that has more to do with the music than the show, because the music was available before the show aired.
Oh, yeah.
And the main stuff would just hit off. It just, from the first time somebody heard that song, it was just, that was the end song.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, I agree with that. Right. Just on a little bit of a tangent, just an extra tiny point. So you mentioned Kalaneri, and then I pointed out that it's a lot of that is just marketing. I think they're really targeting like regular audiences. I don't know why with such a time slot, but another example.
Wit Studio, right?
Yeah.
So another example is that they got an article in the Sankei Shimbun very recently.
Right, because Attack on Titan was such a mainstream smash that having the next thing by that studio, it automatically gives them that little bit of follow-on publicity and attention.
For the mainstream audiences, the first thing they think of is not Mikimoto. It's, from the creators of Attack on Titan, the studio of Attack on Titan.
Right. Okay, so long story short, we still have a few months to go until we really get a firm feel on things. And look, Renato, do you think I'd be overstepping the line here by saying, I know a lot of people online look at, in the English-speaking world, look at television viewing figures when they get released. And
ratings, you mean?
It never means, I'm not saying it's meaningless, because it's an interesting indicator, but it's never really the full indicator of the success of a show here in Japan.
Even more so now. Not just before, like in the 80s and 90s, there was merchandising, but now we've got streaming, now we've got people going to events, now we've got people going to concerts, which make up a lot of the profits. There's so many different ways that anime can sink or swim these days.
Right. The broadcast isn't necessarily a be-all, end-all, I guess. So just to take those sort of figures with that in mind when they do start circulating.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, Japan has finally embrace streaming. They know that's where it's going, and even with Delta, it is on Japanese Hulu now, and it's running about a week behind an episode. Someone might catch it if they're just watching stuff at home and get into it that way. So ratings here are so different, but you hear a lot of people try to use those numbers on how a show is successful
in the English-speaking world.
Yeah, in the English-speaking world, where it's mostly not the ratings, it's more of the music sales, the karaoke, the amount of time they put in karaoke, all the stuff that's going around in town, whether good...
It's not even toy sales.
Yeah.
Right? Sales. A lot of people are saying, they're making robot shows to sell toys. Well, they're really not.
I don't know.
Even something as reliable in the past before as Blu-ray DVD sales as an indicator, not so much the case anymore because of all these other factors where people don't buy Blu-rays and DVDs but will still gladly stream and buy the merchandise for things.
Yeah, Blu-ray sales went down again this year.
All right, well, it will be interesting to see how things progress. But thank you, Mazinga, for your question. And to anyone else who has any questions for us, we can be reached at speakerpod@gmail.com, or you can contact or follow me on Twitter. You can find me at Gwyn Campbell, one word. Egan, you're mysteriously venusing it.
I'm here and there.
Adrian?
You can follow me on Twitter at Giant Robo, usually on there. Not very active, but every once in a while, I'll put something on that seems to be popular.
And if anyone throws you a question, you tend to get back to them pretty quick.
Yeah. Especially if it has something. Usually, everyone asks me about toys. if you have a toy question, let me know. And look out for that Evolutions Toys Mospita Legios that's coming out internationally.
And Renato, anywhere people can find you?
No.
All right. On that note, this is... What episode are we up to for the Gert Talk? It's 4?
Doesn't really matter.
Well, either way, this is the Gert Talk for episode 6.
Episode 6 of Macross Delta.
And with Renato as my echo, I am folding out.